C'est moi. Bienvenue à Ubuntu Podcast saison 11, épisode 23. C'est mercredi 15e août. C'est semaine. Je suis rejoint par Alan. Comment allez-vous, Alan?
Tu vois?
Hey, Marc. Est-ce que bien, si. Marc?
Muy bien. Dos cervezas por favor.
Can you tell that Martin has been away in France by any chance?
Although, truth be told, I've been doing exactly what Mark just did. The whole time I've been away is every time somebody spoke to me in French, I understood what was said to me and then replied in Spanish.
Good work.
Yes.
Welcome
yes.
back. It's been not the same without you.
Yeah, it's been fun, though, not having to...
not being here?
Not being here, but also being able to enjoy the podcast again. I've been able to be a listener for a whole month. It's been great. Anyway, so, Alan, what have you been up to since I last spoke to you 5 weeks ago?
You know that that memory that you buy, that gaming RAM? Well, I've been...
Oh, yes.
I've been, you know, the one stuff with LEDs and heat sinks all over it.
RGB.
Yeah, I've been out buying RAM as well, so it's not just you. I've bought a couple of sticks of additional RAM. You may remember some while ago, I walked into a YMCA and walked out with the ThinkPad. I bought some RAM for that ThinkPad. It's an old ThinkPad R50E, I think it is. And it came in the post just the other day. 1 gigabyte of DDR333 RAM, which should be perfect for that machine. And should make my games on there fly, the games being Commander Keen.
NetHack.
And Doom. And
wow, Commander Keen. I really enjoyed that game. I used to love that.
Yes, it's great fun.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, God.
The original version is a 2D platformer circa 1994 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, think of it as like a unlicensed Mario kind of thing, you know, but really good, really, really good.
Ah, yes, I can see it. It's one of those games that has like amazing box art that makes you think it's going to be some really flashy thing, and then it's like,
what's
two sprites
Epic
on a screen.
Games,
yes, or was it id Software or Apogee?
Apogee, that's who I'm thinking of,
and there was a few of them. I think there's four different Commander Keens, anyway. I bought some new hardware. New to me anyway, that RAM, and I'm going to stick it in the laptop. Although I put it in earlier, and the laptop wouldn't boot, and I have a worry that either the RAM is duff or I bought the wrong RAM. I mean, it physically fits. I didn't have to crowbar it in or anything. It does actually fit. It's the right type for that machine, but it wouldn't boot past the big ThinkPad splash.
RAM compatibility issues of the past.
Yeah, well, it could be that I need to put them both in, which is fine. But the weird thing about that laptop, I think one of the RAM slots is on the outside and the other one's on the inside, and you've got to like lift the keyboard up and get underneath, I think.
Mean on the bottom? As opposed to outside the case.
Yeah, outside.
You also need to move some jumpers around to change your IRQ and DMA addresses.
Getting flashbacks.
Those are the days, eh?
PTSD from editing my config.sys and autoexec.bat.
So, Mark.
So that's what I've been up to.
What have you been up to since I last spoke to you?
I have been tooting.
What, in London?
No, I haven't been tooting.
Oh, right, okay.
I have been tooting the verb.
Right, okay. So this will be the alternative social network, the Fediverse, Mastodon.
Yes, that's where I have been. I kind of thought I'd check it out again. I made an account about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it seemed like a good time to check it out again and see if I could do a better job of understanding it. Well, I think I do understand it a bit better now.
So what changed? Why now?
The strange thing about it, which I hadn't quite grasped, was that you pick the instance which you sign up for, and then if you look at, you can either look at the federated timeline, which is like drinking from the fire hose of, you know, everything anyone is saying, which just streams past in a flash, or you can look at your local timeline and like see other people on the same instance as you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to say, you see another instance and you think, oh, that looks interesting, you can't then just watch that public timeline. You have to either have an account there or you have to just follow a bunch of people on there to see what's going on, which Yeah, I have worked out, though, that it is possible, like, the API does just let you call the public timeline for any instance. So in theory, you could add that to a client. So I'm probably going to play around with that and see if I can... There's a good client called Whalebird, which is available as a snap, which is open source.
Yeah.
So I think I might see if I can add the functionality to that, where you can just say, you know, watch this instance's public timeline as well as my own.
Do you also have a mobile client on your phone?
I do. I have Tusky.
Yes, yeah. I'm using the same one.
As do I. Yeah, I recently started getting involved in Mastodon a bit more again. I created an account when it was all the rage, but I've run into this issue where back then the instances were sort of appearing and disappearing quite rapidly, and they were oversubscribed and all sorts of things. Yeah. So you had to pick one that worked. Yeah. And unfortunately, the one that I've picked works, but none of the Linux or open source community are on it. So yes. The problem that I have is I can't discover other people unless I see them tagged in conversations or they follow me or what have you. So I'm having difficulty actually sort of building a network of connections because the instance I'm on has none of the open source crowd on it whatsoever.
Another interesting thing I saw, I can't remember what it's called now, I'll try and remember while we're talking, is someone's made basically a set of lists where you can say, oh, I post about this sort of thing, and then they'll add you to this list, and you can go on the site and you can say, you can just pick a list and say, subscribe me to this. It'll create the list in your account with all of these accounts from various places in the Fediverse.
That sounds very similar to Twitter lists, essentially.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But they're obviously their accounts across.
Sounds more
instances.
Useful on Mastodon though.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
I'll try and remember.
Have you been exclusively on Mastodon or as well as?
I have for the past week I've been occasionally dipping into Twitter to read it, but not posting on there. I did post on a bit today because there was some relevant stuff to say.
Cool.
And I was looking for keyboard advice.
Yes, I gave you keyboard advice on Mastodon yesterday. It's this keyboard that I have here that Alan loves because it makes such a beautiful sound when I type upon its keys.
Is it time to move on?
Yeah, I think it might be. Right, and now it's time for some news. Alan, what have you seen in the news this week?
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has teamed up with the Linux Foundation to create Academy Software Foundation. This sounds impressive, doesn't it? And sounds like there might be famous people involved and money. And that sounds good in our community, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, it does sound good. Do you think there's going to be famous people involved?
Well, there must be, mustn't it? It's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood.
The article was posted on Variety magazine, so it must be. but the important part is that the Linux Foundation is teaming up with Hollywood companies in order to provide support and assistance and, I guess, some money to a whole bunch of open source tools that may be used in the production pipeline of making motion pictures, films, and some of them you probably recognize a few. If you look at the list that's on the post on Variety magazine, GIMP is in the list.
Blender.
I think those were the only two I actually recognized.
Yeah.
Image Magic.
Is that was that in there?
Yeah.
Okay, wow. For the uninitiated.
I recognize CinePaint.
Yeah, I've seen that in the credits of films. I don't know what it is, though.
Plex is in there.
Is that
P-Tex.
It's because the font is so small, I can't read it. I need my glasses.
I was going to say, that would be hilarious if Plex was in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a decent number of projects that are going to be under this foundation.
Mm. So apparently they said the Hollywood's open source use wasn't nearly as healthy as we wanted it to be. And they want to provide help in... helping software developers choose the right licenses, for example, because that can be challenging because the students don't know which of the countless licenses to choose from, which is cool.
Mm.
Yeah, it's good to see applications around this sort of high-end media production coming under a banner that can be better organized. I think there's been a lot of duplication of effort, which, of course, is a perennial problem within the open source community generally. So it's good to see this coming together. Yeah.
And this isn't just like a few like small independent studios either. This is, you know, Disney, DreamWorks, the big guns.
Mm. I found it interesting that this was something that was being shared around by many Linuxy types, and you know, it's a function of the Linux Foundation, which most of the time you don't hear a lot about doing anything, you know, because they're basically a trade body, and you don't see them doing anything that you or I would particularly see on a daily basis. Yet, you know, getting involved in the pipeline to films, which we all consume all the time, is nice to see, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mark, what did you find in the news?
There's been a significant update to LibreOffice.
Ooh.
Yes. So it's been given a bit of a visual refresh. The icons that you get in the app have been updated both on Linux and on Windows. So the Linux version is using the elementary icon set.
Oh.
And Windows is using an icon set called Colibra. And yeah, they look a bit more up to date than the old Tango icons, which were looking a bit sort of, you know, turn of the century. Mm. but there's other things going on as well. As well as the in-app icons, there's the actual icons that you get in your launcher have been updated. Similar sort of style. The sort of visual language hasn't changed, but they've just had a bit of a visual refresh. Mm. And one other thing which I hadn't seen before, which I thought was interesting, is there's now an experimental feature called the notebook bar, which is basically like a ribbon style interface. So like you've seen on or you might have seen on recent versions of MS Office, it's yeah, like it's not like the default by any means. You have to turn on an advanced experimental checkbox to get it, but it's got several different options for how it groups things. But it's I think it's only a writer for now as well at the moment.
I like the way you say in recent versions of Microsoft Office. It's like
decade.
Yeah, it's like many years now that ribbon has been there. People have been complaining about it since like the years of Windows 2000 or whenever it was that was added. It does feel like it's a new thing, and it's terrible partly because nothing we have has that interface, I think.
Yeah.
I went on a training course at a previous company to learn all of the advanced features of the Microsoft Office suite, and all of them. I've got certificates and everything.
That's what sent him over the edge, I think.
Actually, one of the first bits they cover is like introducing you to the ribbon interface. And yeah, it's good and bad in that once you understand how it's organized, it actually makes sense, like where to find the activities that are in the ribbon interface. And once somebody's explained to you the thoughts behind it, it does make sense. But the difficulty is it does require you to go and have someone explain the thoughts behind it before you understand it. But right, once you get it, it's actually very good, and it you know, it's predictable. You can go between the different applications and you can actually find the things that you want quite you know, effortlessly. Mm. Or at least that's what I found.
It's also available as a Snap, and the Snap has the latest version with the latest changes.
But of course, so it does.
That's a great way to get it.
Yeah, so I was looking through the news, and there's been a lot going on at Black Hack 2018, and there was one story that caught my eye, and it was a story about some researchers that have been able to hack some pacemakers and change their therapy profile. So what they were able to do was, because the firmware update process in these pacemakers wasn't cryptographically signed, they were able to inject malicious firmware into these pacemakers and then sort of change how they behaved, like, you know, giving the patient far too many shocks and what have you. When I read about this, it made me think of some of the presentations that Karen Sandler has given in the past. Mm-hmm. She has a heart condition and she has expressed some concerns about, you know, proprietary software in medical devices. And this, I don't know if there have been other examples like this, but I immediately thought, my goodness, this is what she's been, you know, telling us about for years and years. And I went and looked on her Twitter, and she's cited the article and said, you know, she's going to give this some thought before she responds, because when she sees stories like this, it angers her and she has to go and calm down before she has some sort of reasonable response.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, she's talked about at numerous events in the past, and obviously these things happen, these security vulnerabilities in these devices, and it's, you know, a giant case of I told you so from her, really, isn't it?
It is a giant case, and also it's a little bit more concerning than, to me anyway, I mean, maybe it isn't, because, you know, if you hack this thing, you can affect an individual or, you know, a group of patients, but it seems so much more direct and invasive, the harm that this can do, as opposed to, you know, compromising computing devices on the internet. I did go and look, and there's a fairly recent video on YouTube where Karen Sandler gives a version of this presentation. It was recently recorded. It's only 12 minutes long, and we'll embed that in the show notes so you can come and understand her point of view and why she's very cautious about proprietary software in medical devices.
Mm.
Did anyone find any other interesting news this week?
There was some more urgent security news.
Oh, really?
And that's that malicious faxes are hacking your printers.
I have to go into the loft and get a fax machine to find out if it's vulnerable.
No,
is it vulnerable if it's not plugged into a phone line?
I don't know. You can never be too careful, Alan.
I think the only country on earth that is susceptible to this is America, right?
Well, that basically the problem is that a lot of what receives faxes these days is, you know, multifunction printers or general purpose computers,
mm-hmm.
which have some fax receiving software on them. And when the fax protocols were designed, they didn't really think about the fact that you need to secure the image that's coming through on an analog phone line. So that some security researchers have been able to, because, you know, it's a digital to analog conversion, so that signal that's coming in is then converted to data, and that data could be some code which exploits a vulnerability on your printer and then gives someone a foothold inside your network.
Wow, I kind of love that.
And they've actually managed to create some successful proof of concepts where they send a fax, and it apparently uses a similar exploit to that used by the WannaCry ransomware.
Wow, right.
And then that gives them access into the target network.
I mean, it's amusing, obviously, because it's like relatively old technology. I realize there are still plenty of people, and people right now are typing emails to us saying, we use faxes at work. And, you know,
and
I
we couldn't possibly use email.
Right. Well, they could fax us their rant instead. But it does make me wonder exactly how old you can go in terms of technology in order to compromise. You know, is the next step back in time going to be a teletype or something? You can compromise a teletype or something and get into someone's network that way.
A pager.
I'd love to know what the oldest possible thing you can compromise to get on a LAN is. That would be
fun. Unusually for us, we've got two sort of security stories there, and I saw another thing from Black Hat where it said this year there have been more vulnerabilities disclosed than any year before, and it's currently at around 10,000. Not all of those have CVEs, but these are the vulnerabilities that have been disclosed so far this year across the whole industry, which is it's a very large number and somewhat alarming. I think 9,500 of those are to do with Spectre and Meltdown now, aren't they? Right, is it time to move on? All And now it's time for some community news and events. And the first bit of community news that I saw when I got back from holidays was that Elementary have received a mystery donation that has made it possible for them to hire one of their contributors, Cassidy James Blady, on a full-time basis.
I don't think so much this is a mystery donation as a donation from a mystery person. If it was a mystery donation, then it could be a cardboard box. What's in the box? You know, and you never know. And will it pay enough for a person or not? I see what you're saying. This is good news, isn't it, for Elementary? Yeah,
it's terrific news. There's been a few of these recently, these sort of anonymous donations to open source projects, and in some cases not so anonymous, because there's this handshake.org that's sort of come to prominence in recent weeks with, handing out ICO-backed funds to a number of open source projects.
Yes, it's... all I can do is speculate wildly, which I don't think is very helpful. Something about the whole handshake thing seems a bit strange to me, but that might just be because I don't really understand initial coin offerings or anything along those lines. So it may be a completely legitimate thing to do.
I've heard comment that some of these are just from people who've struck big with their Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency and just don't know what to do with the money, or do know what to do with the money, and they want to give back to people or organizations or groups or projects that help them get where they are,
In which case
now in the case of Elementary, my understanding is that it was actually somebody within the Elementary community who had some money and wanted to find a way to help the project, and that's how they were able to broker some additional funding coming into Elementary in order for them to be able to take Cassidy on. So he's going to be working on a bunch of stuff now, and that's good news for Elementary, just ahead of their big new release. That's great, and I'll be really looking forward to seeing what this new momentum in their project brings us.
Mm.
Alan?
Next up, KDE's latest offering, KDE Plasma 5.14, has a new feature that's been available in other platforms, and that is the ability to update firmware. So using the firmware update tool, FWAPD, the KDE Plasma Discover, I shouldn't call it KDE Plasma Discover, it's just Plasma Discover, will soon have the ability to install firmware updates in the same way GNOME users are able to with GNOME software, which is great news.
Excellent, especially off the back of Lenovo joining the LVFS project as well.
Yeah. It's super news because, you know, if people choose not to use GNOME as their desktop, they'll still want to be able to update the firmware in their machines.
Yep.
And given that it's an open source project for maintaining firmware or updating firmware in your machine, this could be added to any of the many open source stores that there are, and it's good that KDE are on the case as well.
Yeah, they've really got some momentum behind the project right now.
Yeah, totally.
Mark, what else is new?
Opera, the long-running web browser, is now available as a snap on Ubuntu and other Linuxes supporting snaps.
Yet another browser.
Yeah.
Yes.
We know something about this.
Mm. May have had some input to this.
Was it your fault?
Yeah, we need to lay the blame squarely at Jesse from Late Night Linux podcast. He had a prediction this year that he set a benchmark of snaps will succeed when Audacity, Mumble, I think it was, and Opera are available as snaps in the Snap Store. So Alan and I got together with a community contributor, Daniel Llewellyn, also known as Diddle Dan Online, and one afternoon in Basingstoke Library, we started snapping these three things. And I think Dan did Audacity, Alan, you did Mumble.
Which I am now talking to you through, yes.
Yeah, as am I, I'm using the Mumble snap right now. And I took on Opera. So I made a proof of concept. And then since January, there's been sort of us contacting Opera and then us working with the desktop team in order to make components of the Chromium browser reusable. So there's some codecs that are linked to the Chromium version. And we've managed to put this all together, and it's resulted in Opera publishing their snap. And I think that, you know, at the half, well, just over three quarters of the way through the year, Jesse, your prediction is safe. Well done. Have we got some events?
We do have some events. The first event is FOSDEM, which is the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting. And they've just announced it's happening on the 2nd and 3rd of February 2019 in Brussels. And they have the call for participation out now. So this is where all of the open source community people in Europe go and make merry for a few days. And there's tracks on all sorts of projects and topics around open source and related things.
Mm. And there's developer rooms and loads of projects have stands demos.
Big exhibition
and all
space.
Kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, it's massive. Lots might try and go again this time.
Yeah, I'd like to go next year as well. It's been a long time. That'd be great.
Mm. Yes.
Any other events,
Belgian
Alan?
Beer being drunk as well.
Yes. There's another event, and that's coming up this weekend, and it's OggCamp. I say this weekend as we record this. Yeah. And we're all going to Sheffield in the UK. The scheduled track you can find on the website if you're going to come along this weekend. You'll find it at oggcamp.org. And there are social events happening on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. We're going to be there the whole weekend, aren't we? Friday to Monday.
Yes.
We are. Yes.
So as you listen to this, we may well be travelling up in the battle bus.
We will be in the Ubuntu Podcast battle bus, yes.
The event is sponsored by Entroware, the OggCamp community, who paid voluntarily for tickets, Ubuntu, supported by Canonical, and OpenSUSE.
What a terrific lineup of sponsors.
Mm. Mm. If you've got a younger person coming along, there's also going to be a Coda Dojo. You can sign them up for a younger person ticket on the website so they can estimate the numbers that are going to be there. You might want to do that now, before you start driving up there, just to make sure there's going to be room capacity for the younglings in the Coda Dojo.
My understanding is that the Raspberry Pi Foundation's Ben Nuttall is going to be running those Coda Dojos.
Yes.
And it was sponsored by a grant from Dot Everyone that made that possible.
Fantastic.
We know you must be using the brilliant Pocket Casts because it's, well, brilliant. You can be brilliant too by giving each Ubuntu podcast episode a star in the Pocket Casts show notes to help more brilliant people find our brilliant show.
We definitely need to commission Laura with the correct text about Pocket Casts because we now know that that's technically inaccurate.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, do rate, comment and subscribe and mash the like button and all those things on our podcasts on iTunes and Google Podcasts. And
oh, yeah, we're on
YouTube.
Google Podcasts now.
Yeah, you did that, didn't you?
I don't think I did. I think they did it for us. Oh. I checked that it worked.
Well, that was good of them.
Yes. Oh, by the way, that Mastodon thing is called Trunk. If you go to communitywiki.org/trunk, it has the list that you can subscribe to.
Neat.
And you can also tell them if you think you'd like to be on one of the lists and have lots of people follow you.
Right.